From the Spec Network, this is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show.
This episode of Fragmented is brought to you by Instabug. With Instabug, you'll get the most comprehensive in-app feedback SDK for mobile applications. With Instabug, you'll improve your app quality and iterate faster by receiving real-time feedback and insights directly from your application as it occurs in the field. Now, what this really means is anyone who's using your app out there can then provide feedback for anything that perhaps went wrong. It could be a crash. It could be a particular situation in the app that should not have occurred. And users can submit that directly from the app and deliver it to you. With that, you'll see the steps to reproduce the problem, any console logs, network request logs, a view hierarchy inspection, and much, much more, along with a full overview of all the session details. All of that information together makes it much easier to reproduce that exact error or situation that caused the app to either crash or put it into a unpredictable or unfavorable condition, which we know as developers is very hard to replicate if we don't have all the details. Furthermore, Instabug is very easily to integrate into your application. Just takes 1 minute to integrate it directly with your application. And Instabug has been trusted by over 20,000 different companies around the world to enhance their app quality and iterate faster. Some of these companies include Lyft, eBay, and T-Mobile, and many, many more. You can go to instabug.com/fragmented. You can sign up, install the SDK, and you will get their brand new t-shirt and a 14-day free trial. Again, to do that, go to instabug.com/fragmented. Kaushik, you went to Google I.O. this year, is that correct?
I did. Google I.O. 2019 was a lot of fun. We missed you at I.O.,
yes,
Don.
Yes.
You couldn't make it this time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why what we thought this time is we'll maybe have like just a quick fragment or a quick show where we talk about some of the announcements, at least like the ones that stood out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hoping, I could get like your 2 cents on it because I didn't get to talk to you at I.O. So yeah, that we thought we'll kick the show off with that.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. In years previous, for the last 3+ years, I think we've done the Google I.O. show where we've one of us or both of us have been at Google I.O. doing interviews. And this is the first year that we actually didn't do that. Amazingly, but most people don't know this, like it's actually an incredible amount of work to make that happen. Between the logistics, bringing recording equipment, finding a quiet place to record. And for those of you that we have interviewed and are listening, know that that's kind of an interesting thing to make happen. So we didn't do it this year.
We have dragged Android developers to like all corners of like Shoreline Amphitheater, ducking under trees or like behind objects that would block sound or something.
You still hear the birds in the background, you know?
I know.
So anyway, no, we didn't do it this year. And like you said, you did go. I watched some of the announcements remotely, and it was kind of a thing that we just wanted to sit down and talk about what happened. So from your perspective, let's talk about what you saw kind of and what were the kind of the big announcements that you feel were the big takeaways, and then we can kind of go from there.
Yep, absolutely. Before that, I do want to say this time we did have a whole bunch of our listeners come up and say hi. Thank you so much for doing that. It's always such a pleasure for us. Some of them wore our limited edition t-shirts as well, and that was amazing. I hope all of you who met me at least like got your decals, like the MacBook decals or like, you know, your PC decals.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we just want to say thank you so much. It means a lot to us that, you know, you wore the t-shirts, came and said hi.
Definitely. Thanks for coming and hunting Kaushik out and getting those decals and those shirts.
Alrighty. So Don, I wanted to like break the I.O. 2019 into sort of two parts. One is just like the generic announcements, and then we'll step into like obviously the Android developer announcements.
Okay.
And I want to get your thoughts on that.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I thought this time I.O. was great. It was like nice and mellow. I felt amazing because it was like, oh, this is what most people must feel when they're from the conference. When,
you know, you're not recording.
When you're not recording or have something. And I was like, wow, Google I.O. is actually kind of fun. Like, you know, it's like when you didn't have as much stress.
Yes.
That being said, I will say this time, and some of the folks did mention this too, it seemed like a little lackluster overall. Like, you know, there wasn't any like big bang crazy announcement, like, you know, like Kotlin, like, you know, introducing Kotlin as like a supported language, or, you know, like, you know, this machine learning thing that just like makes like calls for you. There wasn't any like big bang kind of announcement where people were like, holy cow, that is amazing, you know? But I think there were a lot of really solid, good announcements. So it was almost like a year where they were like, okay, we're going to like improve a lot of like these baseline things and just make the platform overall much better. So that was at least like my overall feeling. Did you get a chance to look at, to watch the keynotes or like I get a sense of some of these sessions?
No, this year I approached it much differently. I mean, I've been remote for the majority of these Google IOs. I think I've been to three maybe. But typically I would watch the keynote and this year I didn't. And I said, you know what, I have a lot of stuff to do. I'm just going to work on this stuff and kind of watch social channels like Twitter and whatever. And if there's something that's really like just people are ecstatic about, then I'm going to go back and watch it. And I didn't see any of that. And it was kind of weird because I saw a lot of people online on Twitter talking about how they said the exact same words as you, like it felt like it was a little bit lackluster. And at that point, to be honest, as 100% frank here, I actually had a significant amount of JOMO going on. But for those who don't know, it's JOMO.
Yeah, for those of us, yeah, who aren't aware of like the millennial terms, please help us here.
It's JOMO, and that means joy of missing out. And I had that actually quite a bit. And there was a little bit of, you know, FOMO, which is FOMO, fear of missing out initially. But then when I started to see that nothing spectacular was unfolding, I just kind of like, I was like, oh, okay, all right. You know, it's not that bad. I'm kind of glad. And being an independent consultant, a lot of people don't realize this, is that I don't get to take paid days off to go there. So a day that normally someone gets paid to go to a conference, I don't. Like, that's money I lose. And if you calculate that, it's super expensive for someone who runs their own company to go to Google I.O. So overall, no, didn't watch the keynotes, just kind of watched from some of the highlights. What did you think about some of the keynotes that you had saw, or what did you see?
Well, I mean, I was there for the keynote. I will say this. Overall, like non-developer, I was like looking forward to like some of the stuff. Like the Pixel announcement, obviously, is like I didn't actually expect them, because usually Google has an independent event where they announce new hardware and like devices. But like a lot of the online rumor sites were mentioning a new device potentially being announced. So I'm guessing they got the tip from, you know, from other sources. The Pixel 3a was interesting. So the Pixel 3a, for those who don't know, is like a new Pixel device, obviously. It wasn't the Pixel 4, which is what you would expect, because this is like this would be the fourth year for a new device.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was wondering. Like, I don't know much about this 3a. I haven't dug into it. So why is it called 3a? So I'm really interested to hear what you have to say about it.
Absolutely. So, I mean, for those who understand like the mobile hardware device sort of lineup in the world today, the iPhone did something similar-ish with their 5 SE. Like, you know, so they brought in a smaller, slightly smaller version, or I shouldn't say smaller, a sort of limited edition of the iPhone, right? So they had like the most modern device you can purchase, and then there's like a step down.
Yeah.
So I think Google used a similar strategy here where the Pixel 3a it's an amazing phone. And if you see the specs, it's almost like, wow, this is, you know, any previous year, this would have been like, you know, the flagship device.
Yeah.
This year, they introduced 3a. The 3a, amazingly, the cost is, they said around $399. So it's like $400.
Yeah.
That I thought was amazing. $400 for a really solid device. And the specs are almost similar to a Pixel 3. Again, like, you know, for those who are interested, you can like search online and find it. There were some aspects, I think, like the only, I don't recall where it isn't like as good as a flagship, but I think Google's whole approach was like, hey, there's this amazing Pixel device that has half of the cost of like, you know, other typical flagship devices. And that's what they wanted to announce. They showed, and many people would see the ad, like a lot of the photos that it takes, like, you know, in the night shot photos are like sometimes even better than the iPhone X. So that's definitely something that they pushed forward. I thought the device is like really cool. The only thing is I actually have a Pixel 2 right now.
Yeah.
Did you upgrade to a Pixel 3?
No, that's actually my next question. As I'm wondering, I'm like, I wonder if this is an upgrade from if I have a Pixel 2, which I do, same as you, would it be an upgrade from a Pixel 2? Or would I kind of be like a lateral move?
So interestingly, I'll try to find this link. Maybe it was CNET or someone who wrote this article, because eventually I'm not a very... Like, as much as I love hardware devices, I can't, like, follow, like, the specs, like, you know.
Me either.
Line item by line item. So, eventually, what I did is, even though I was in the keynote, I was like, wait, so how does this differ exactly from the 3 and 2? There's this handy chart. I'll try to find it. It's, like, by CNET. And they say the same thing, right? Overall, I think the summary of that is, well, if you're a 2 and you don't necessarily need one of those features, I forget what the feature is, then you should just wait until you like the new devices come out, because otherwise, like, the Pixel 2 is pretty much the same.
I'm looking at a chart right now of Pixel 3a versus Pixel 3 versus Pixel 2, and one of the things that's like a huge red flag for me right here is that the Pixel 3a has storage space of 64 gigs and Pixel 2 has 64 or 128. And I'm a 128 gigabyte user because I download a ton of audiobooks and videos offline. So like that like, immediately for me is like a no-go.
I see. So the space. I think, yeah, the processor is also like a tad bit slower than the 3, but it's like similar to the 2 or something. But yeah, the space thing I didn't think of. But yeah, that's a good point.
Oh, there's an audio jack too on a 3A.
Oh yeah, that's the other thing. So like, yeah, and with much cheers, like that was the funny thing. Like, like everyone was like, yeah, when they said like, oh yeah, we're bringing the audio jack back, which is kind of funny in some ways.
Well, you know, it's until everybody can agree on this common interface, which with Apple, yeah, that's kind of like whatever.
I know, yeah.
It's never happening.
Thank you, Apple.
Yeah, $60 dongle, whatever. Which I have it in my hand right now. Like, speaking of that, I got a MacBook, one of those new MacBook 2s, and it's all USB-C. There's a $60 dongle for like USB.
Everything's a dongle.
Oh, my God. Anyway, so until they can agree on a common interface, I don't think it's going to take off. So it's interesting that they brought it back. It'll be even more interesting to see what happens with the Pixel 4.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing. They are waiting to announce the Pixel 4. They'll probably do a new... I mean, again, I have no information whatsoever. This is just me, like, you know, I have to put that caveat out that this is just me, like, surmising. I think they're going to have a new independent event and announce the Pixel 4, which will be the flagship again and might hopefully have, like, some pretty cool features. So,
interesting.
At least, personally, I'm going to wait for the Pixel 4.
Me too.
Because I have a Pixel 2 and, like, you know, it works pretty well. I like the Pixel 2 a lot. So yeah. I'm just going to wait for the Pixel 4.
So what else did you see?
Okay. So now actually, like, given that we spend like a lot, the other obvious thing, which has been the case for some time now at most IOs, is the whole machine learning thing and like the AI aspect of it, right? And there was this joke, I think, on Twitter where they're like, oh, let's play a drinking game every time someone on stage the keynote says AI and machine learning, like, you know, take a shot. So that was mentioned like quite a few times. That all being said, some of the demos were like pretty amazing. You know, I don't recall exactly what it was, but like the Google Maps, the Google Assistant, like, the whole focus was how clever the Google Assistant is. There was this automated thing that they did during the keynote where basically they said, hey, book me a ticket on this date, blah, 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 you know, and it just like almost it was like an automated service. And you and I have talked about this because sometimes we have like these tedious forms that we want to fill and we just want to write scripts to like basically take care of this. It was almost a similar approach where in order to book the ticket, it would like search the site, find the best ticket, you know, pull that ticket down, pre-fill all your information and then say, hey, does the information look right? Like, you know, here's your credit card fill, blah, blah, blah. If you think this is a good flight, say yes, you click yes, and then it proceeds and then like does the other bookings. It was almost, I think we're getting closer to like, you know, the whole Jarvis / Tony Stark, you know, kind of universe. Because it was so cool. Like literally, like this was like a pre-recorded demo at IO in the keynote, but it was super cool. Like, you know, I think I tweeted this out too. I just realized, like, you know, maybe in our lifetime, we're going to get there where we're going to have like just like this intelligent assistant that just does everything for us. So That was super cool. That was at least the part that I was most impressed throughout in the keynote.
I always have this skepticism about a lot of this AI stuff, and not because I don't like it. I do like it. It's just that I feel that Google and Apple and anybody else who has this technology always comes up here and shows happy path, you know? Like, mm-hmm. It's always like, look at these amazing things. Here's something great we can do and blah, blah, blah. And look, I can have it call my mom when I think about it. You know what I mean? You know, and it's like, okay, all right, like I get it. But like, there's always like these weird edge cases when you try it and it like, it picks up a word wrong or something like that. And you're just like, ah, this didn't work. Or like you need to like maybe book a flight and it's going to have like, oh, two kids, but one of them's an infant on the lap. And like, it's like all these like weird idiot, you know, kind of things. So I always feel like some of these products are like always half baked. I do understand that they got to get them out there and show them to people. I guess I just wish it wasn't so, you know, hand wavy, magical, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because I can think about it. I was like, oh, no, don't use that credit card. I want the other credit card with points. Like, how does all that work? I mean, you're right. I think this is definitely something they would be thinking about. And many a time, like, what the announcements they make here is just to show the possibility, right? I'm pretty sure.
Yes, exactly.
I'm hoping they're thinking about this, but... Oh, well,
like, I'm positive. You'll find out. Yeah, I'm positive they're thinking about it. It's just like, I come up with a little bit of skepticism. Like, all right, well, let's see what happens. I think that the only one that I didn't hit with skepticism, well, I did hit with skepticism until I tried it. And that was a couple years ago when they had Google Photos came out and you could like search for, you know, a tree and it would show you all your pictures of the tree. And I was like, ah, that's not going to work. And I tried it and I was like, oh my God, this is magic. Yeah. And I still feel like it's magic sometimes because I'm like, oh, I have a picture of my dog that I wanted to show my friend. I'm like, and I'll just type in dog and then boom, 50 pictures pop up. I'm like, oh, it's that one. And which is, and if you can start matching the faces and put names to it, then it's even crazier.
Yeah, it's that. Yeah, for sure. Like Google Photos and still remains one of those like crazy things.
Nothing compares to it so far that I can tell.
Yeah. The other announcements quickly was like they announced a Nest Hub Max. I'm not a big fan of all of this because like any like smart home device that like has I'm like very big about like the whole like privacy thing. I don't usually like too many devices that track a lot of information. But yeah, the Nest Hub Max was like an announcement that they made. Getting slightly into the Android world. The other thing I should mention from the keynote that I thought was pretty cool was they did this whole thing. Did you get a chance to see this done? Like the live subtitles thing or live captions? I think they call it live captions.
I previewed that, kind of just like watched it a little bit. That was something that was very interesting to me because I've always do a lot of video content. And so I thought, wow, like
that's right.
I would love if this worked. And so I'm interested to see where this goes.
Yeah, I mean, I know like YouTube did this for some time, right? Like they could have like the live captioning, but this seemed like next level. Like it seemed like it was doing some amazing stuff. And Google also demoed how they're helping some folks like from an accessibility point of view, how like, you know, they've been training like people with different disabilities to use this in like in a constructive way. So all of that was amazing and really cool. So that stuff was very enticing.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if they're able to take this to, you know, like you said, accessibility, but take this a step further with translation too. Like if I could just, you know, they demoed a couple of years ago that the headphones where you could talk, this person's talking in Spanish, this one's talking in French, but they're able to talk to each other. If I could just do that on my phone and just like have it almost like they're talking, I could sit there and read it or something, like that would be fantastic. Right.
I don't know if now I think I might be mixing the IOs in my head. They may have demoed this, something similar, or I could just be dreaming this. Like, I don't know. There was something about the internationalization that was also brought up. But yeah, no, or I could just be mixing IOs in my head at this point. That was one. And I think like entering into the Android world, like obviously Android Q, the beta, I think beta 3 dropped. And the dark theme was the big stuff, which I thought was good. Smart Reply, a lot of like the other, like, you know, the well-being mode. Honestly, all of that is like great, but it's not something that stood out to me. The one that stood out to me the most was like the privacy controls. And I know you and I have talked about this, right? Like this year, like one of my goals has been like, I need to be more conscious about like just privacy and like the amount of data that I'm like shooting out to the world. Because up until like recently, I was like, ah, it's fine. Just like take my data and like make my life useful. And I realized that's not entirely, especially given like a lot of the events we've seen now, that's not a very, especially as a developer, that's not an extremely responsible point of view, you know?
What do you, yeah, I'd like to dig into that just for a minute. What do you, I guess, what's changed from the previous stance that you had of like, here, take my data, make my life easier? What kind of was that impetus, which was like, all right, I think I need to lock this down more?
I think the real like hard hitting, where it really hit home was, I think it's interesting because they changed this a lot now, but I've mentioned this previously. If you go to myactivity.google.com, and if you did this before this IO, some of the information you have is scary. Like, it is super scary. They're like, oh, you
stopped
your Google Home with this keyword, right?
Yep.
Oh, you opened this app. Oh, you know, your location was tracked here.
Oh, like, you drove to Brooklyn.
Yeah. Oh, your kids, you know, your kids' location is this. Or, I mean, it doesn't say kids' location. I'm just like exaggerating.
Your kids want to know what a cow fart sounds like.
Exactly. Everything. Like, you would be... It is crazy how much information they have. So sometime early or maybe mid last year was, I think I looked at it once and I was like, oh, Jesus, that is like scary as hell, right? That, and then obviously with the whole Facebook thing that happened, where like, you know, Facebook just like shared a lot of like this data pretty responsibly to like people, and like that had like a huge influence, at least like in the political climate and, you know, in many ways our life, made me realize it's the collective to say, for each of us to say like, oh, my data is not that important, I'm not doing anything shady, oh, my data is not important, is just not true anymore, because the every single data point that had like data available for these folks, for these analytic firms to analyze, has caused an effect, right? Because mm-hmm. they've understood behavior very clearly by virtue of all of these single data points that are out there, right? And I'm mm-hmm. one of those data points, because it's like, yeah, I've never been too restrictive about the data that I share yeah. online.
Yep.
And so that was like the big fundamental shift. And early this year, I started to think more carefully about like, okay, I'm going to stop sending all this data and see how that works, right? And so that's why, like, I mean, some folks have seen this. I started using an Android and an iPhone to like compare and then start to see like, okay, like how much data can I use? Can I not use? And historically, Apple has always like sort of pushed this item saying like, oh, privacy is a feature. Like, you know, we don't send any of your data. So obviously, like, that's why I wanted to like keep a close eye of this. And the other thing is, once I...
So that's Google, why we haven't seen you in a while. You've been developing for Apple. Is that what you're saying?
I've been learning Swift, man. Like, that's, you know, like just switching.
You heard it here, folks. Just kidding.
Yeah, I'm kidding as well. You know what they say, right? Like, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
They do. They do. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, going along those lines, what I've done is I've, and I think I mentioned this to you too. In myactivity.google.com, what I did is I paused, because to Google's credit, they give you the ability, and like Facebook or like other companies, where they basically just make it impossible for you to find where. Google is very like, it's easy to go to Google and say, stop taking my data or delete all my data, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the myactivity.google.com page. So I did that, and I realized many services are not that useful, right? Google Maps, for example, you couldn't use a Google Home, basically, if you paused your web activity. Like, Google Home does, like, you know, every time you ask the assistant something, it'll basically say, no, you need to enable this permission.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, like,
bonkers.
I've tried turning that off before, and, like, literally all hell broke loose. Or, like, I couldn't do anything. I was just like, well, Google's completely useless right now.
Right.
Did you find
that? That was the big turning point for me, because... when I did that, I realized I couldn't use any of the Google Homes in my home.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wait, I don't think that should be right. Because for what I use Google Home, which is like, you know, hey, turn the lights on, turn the lights off, like, you know, what's the weather like? I don't think you need any of my information for that.
Set a timer for 10 minutes.
Yeah. So that was like a big turning point, which is why I was like, no, I really care about this. I've started to care about this a lot. Which is why, like, you know, the big announcement in Android Q this time is, like, they are taking a very strong stance on, like, privacy. And again, like, I think Apple was doing some of this before, but, like, Google being Google, I think are personally going to do it, like, much better, because they can just do a lot of this stuff 10 times better than any company I know in the world.
Yeah.
I think it was called federated learning. That's what Sundar Pichai announced, like, during the IO, where basically the data that they're using is not any way personally identifiable, right? It isn't PII information.
Mm-hmm.
It's
let's break down that acronym for folks that don't know it. PII.
Yeah, Actually, I might have used that incorrectly. It's not PII information. It's basically PII. PII is personally identifiable information.
Yep.
And I think within this, it's forgetting me, GDPR. What's the thing in Europe? Where
GDPR?
GDPR. Thank you.
I don't know what that acronym means, so don't ask.
I actually have no idea what GDPR is. I just know
it's a pain in the butt.
General Data Protection Regulation. That's what it stands for. And I think the EU like had this huge push where they're like, if you don't follow GDPR, you will be like, you know, legally like liable, like your service is legally liable and you're not allowed to operate. So, and they took a very strong stance on like being able to use privacy. Again, like we're not going to get into that because that's like a whole big topic altogether. But a lot of that's where PII, I think at least that's where it came into my sort of like purview, and like the term PII was used. So
interesting.
They talked in the keynote this time at I/O about how they're using a lot of this information on your phone. They do the processing information on your phone. They generate the necessary network or like, you know, the models, the AI models that are useful, and just send that aspect because that is completely, devoid of any PII. Yeah. So
from what I saw, they're also changing the like the permission model stuff too from Android. So you can say like, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I just briefly looked at this, like, hey, I want to give access to location to this app once, and then, or for the session of the app, and then after that, did you see that at all?
I don't. So what I maybe I missed that, but what I did see was I think like with Google Maps, they had like an incognito mode and like things like that, so you could like quickly switch to incognito mode and then say like, don't send any data for this session.
Okay, all right.
Or I might be missing something, but or maybe it's there, like, you know. Yeah, that definitely, like, there's a whole privacy aspect to it. Oh, I see. The thing that they did,
it's an Android Q thing is what it is. It's just bringing them, like, you can say, hey, allow it all the time, or only allow it when I'm using the app, or deny it.
Yeah, the location stuff. Like I think iOS does this a lot. So they've like adopted pretty much the same thing where they're like, hey, use my location just when the app is foregrounded, don't use it in the background, or like, you know, yeah, they have like different controls. iOS has had this for a long time. So that's something that they're definitely using. Google Maps had an incognito mode, which is pretty cool. The one that came to mind to me though is myactivity.google.com. If you go to that, what they now allow you to do is say, just keep my data for 3 months and then automatically delete it, which I think is like a better sort of like mix. What I've noticed is they don't do this for all the controls yet. For those who don't understand myactivity.google.com, you should absolutely visit this page and then get a pleasant surprise to see like all the data that Google has on you. But they've partitioned it based on different controls. So there's like location control, web activity. That's the stuff that we talked about with Google Home being unusable if you don't have that enabled. I think the web activity and data is the one where they say, keep my data for 3 months and then like flush it out, right? So you can keep it for 3 months, 6 months, or like, you know, always on. I had that pause. So I was like, no, don't send anything. I've actually relaxed that a little now once that control has come in. Saying, you know, wipe my data every 3 months.
Yeah, it's pretty cool what you can do. You can manage, like, you know, device activity, web app, or all the products in general. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, and I thought like a lot of that stuff is pretty cool. And yeah, so that's why like it, the whole like overall announcement about privacy being a focus in Android Q definitely made me feel better. Like, as a developer, it's going to be a pain in the butt for all of us.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's so many things that are changing, right? Like you said, the location stuff. I mean, in the apps that I use at Instacart, we use location heavily because if you're a shopper, right? Like, we need like the location, customer. We need to like track. Obviously, on the customer side, we don't track locations, but for shoppers, we need to know where you are so we can send customer updates. A lot of that is going to change, but I think it's for the better. I think as in general, like as an Android user, it's definitely for the better.
Yeah, I think you nailed it there. It's as from a user perspective, I like that ability. From a developer's perspective, I kind of like want to smash my head on the table because it gives me more work to do. But you know, it's in the end of the day, it's moving in the right direction.
Yeah. So overall, let me see. I jotted down some notes that I thought these are just like bullet points. I don't want to go into too much detail. Like Flutter was obviously the thing that everyone kept an eye on, right? Because it's surprising. the native Android developers, and a lot of these Android developers are mostly folks that you and I like closely deal with, and like I would say like we're like probably in that camp too, right? Mm-hmm. Like the native developer camp. A lot of them like didn't necessarily, and this is a sentiment I've noticed, like not everyone is super excited about Flutter and the native Android front. But you won't believe it, in like a lot of these in the sessions that I went to one of the Flutter sessions because I wanted to know how things are going on that side, and people are super excited about Flutter, like, you know, the crowds were like cheering. Like I thought like people cheered more like there than they did like, you know, about Android and some of the keynote stuff, which I thought was surprising, or that could just be like me, like, you know, my head. But I noticed this, like people are very excited about Flutter.
One of the reasons why we started this podcast is because we always felt that some other podcasts were kind of limited in what they could say, given, you know, whatever reasons, but we wanted to start this because we felt that we had opinions that wanted to be shared, and and that's, you know, I feel that, and another way to put it is I feel that a lot of Googlers feel a certain way about Flutter. And it's obvious they feel a certain way about Flutter. And let's take it for what it is. I mean, if you work on the Android team, I mean, that's kind of a threat to your job, to your product that you've been working on. I mean, it really is. And so a lot of people kind of read into that a lot. But then there's a lot of the other folks out there that are out there building things. And that's the camp that I'm in. I'm in the camp of, I want to build something. I don't care what it is. You know, I'll use a web technology. I'll use Rails. I'll use JavaScript. I'll use, you know, I'll use Flutter. I'll use Kotlin, whatever. My goal is to ship something. And I think that's where a lot of people are nowadays. Like they have an idea for a product, or they're trying to build something for their business, and they like, I need to build this Android app. And they're like, as soon as you know that you need an Android app, you know, you need an iOS app. They're hand in hand. Like you can't just have one. And I think that's where a lot of people nowadays are just like, they're seeing this like, wow, this is, if especially if it's a green, like mainly if it's a greenfield app, meaning it's a brand new app, not brownfield, meaning that's already existing, you want to retrofit stuff on it. That's not there yet. And I think that's way too difficult. But if it's something brand new and you're starting, like it's an, you know, it's not a game. It's not anything that's super hardcore that needs very specific features per platform. Like Flutter's something that you should probably look at. It's, you know, and I think a lot of people are realizing that now.
Oh, absolutely. And you might be really happy to hear this, but the big announcement that I thought was huge this time was in the Flutter camp was they announced that Flutter is also coming for the web. For those who didn't know, Flutter was primarily only for iOS and Android, right? So Flutter is also coming for the web, which makes it like, again, very interesting now, especially from a business perspective, right?
Yeah, that one's a little weird. Like, I don't know, to tell you the truth, I don't know how I feel about that one because we already have the web. Like everyone's already writing for the web. We have HTML, CSS, JavaScript. We already have that. So I really don't see you being able to pull those languages from the existing web community. You know, people are going to use what they use now. And, I think the big problem has been two platforms, iOS and Android, and so that solves a huge problem. The fact that Dart is an ECMAScript language, as far as I remember, is a benefit, but I don't know. I'm on the fence, really, about the web stuff, and I'm kind of just standing back, kind of, you could say I'm standing in the back of the presentation hall, you know, standing there with my arms crossed with some skepticism, saying, like, let's see how this unfolds.
I thought that was like really interesting, especially for small firms, right? Like, because it just adds one more platform, right? That makes it very compelling, at least from a business perspective. But again, yeah, you're right. How does that work?
It's because it's different. If you think about it, like the form factor of web is complete. Well, it's responsive. It's different. I mean, CSS, like we've been using these tools for a while and they're not perfect, but it's just a different environment together. Now, does that mean that we're going to try to go all web? I don't know. I've always thought the web's going to win. Web eventually will win anyways. But again, I don't know where this is going to go with Flutter at this point.
The other thing I found that's a little confusing as well is like even there seems to be so many competing technologies with that, right? Like there's the Flutter for web. I think there was also some announcement, maybe it was a keynote or the developer keynote, where like Google's whole AMP app thing, right? What's that? I figured what it is.
I forgot what it is.
There was something... There was something there as well where they announced how like Twitter, I think, has like this equivalent, and like mobile web is you know, another thing that they push, like that team was pushing, because if you see, they're like, oh, look at this mobile web application. It's so fluid. It's like almost like it's native. So, and then there's like the whole instant app thing from the Android native world, right? Which again, no news whatsoever, like complete, like, you know, crickets on that front.
Yep.
So I just feel that there's a lot of, in typical Google style, there is a lot of, at least in my mind, competing sort of technologies that aren't exactly the same, but achieve a very similar goal. So who knows? Let's see what that happens. But
the AMP stuff, for folks who don't know, is accelerated mobile pages. And it's the idea is to enable your web content to be delivered much more quickly. And it's a whole, you go to developers.google.com/AMP, like AMP, and you can learn all about it. And it's like caching and speeding up your web app to make it super fast. And Google's been going down this road for a while now. You'll see, like, you know, when I was there at I/O last time, a couple years ago, they were talking about all kinds of progressive web apps, and like they're definitely pushing that. And then it's interesting to see that Flutter is going to web as well. And then you said something
that the instant app one.
Very interesting, is that the instant app was silent. And the day that I saw instant app came out, I was not sold on it. I was like, nope, not doing that. And I know a lot of people don't agree with me on that, but that's still how I feel about it. And if someone...
That was pretty prescient on your part, because I was like, wait, that... Because I think we had this conversation too, right? And I was like, wow, that's like super interesting. I can imagine that being super useful for like Android developers, and maybe it was, but you're right. Again, you know, the amount of work that was involved to get that going. And yeah, it's clear, like, or at least like, who knows if it's still going on or not, but... there was not a peep mentioned about this. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. I'm sure something is not going as well as Google hoped there.
And one of the interesting things about the instant app things is that, sure, I know they're like probably zipped up and everything. They're trying to make them as small as possible, but I think there's like a 4 megabyte limit. And if it's zipped, whatever, even at that size, it's huge compared to, and let me give you the example. I search for something, like maybe I'm looking for houses in my neighborhood, or I'm looking to move, and I search for those houses, and I end up on a realty website, and I click it, and it says, hey, it notifies me, there's an instant app. Would you like to install it? And I've actually clicked yes. And then I sat there and waited for it to load, to install. And like, it's nothing like I saw on the demo. And then boom, then it finally starts. And I thought, I'm like, wow, like I just waited forever for this thing to happen. I'm like, I'm not even getting that great experience. I can just go to that realty's webpage, swipe through the pictures, back out of it, and I'm back. You know, it just felt like it was too took too long to render and too intrusive, you know? I don't know about intrusive is probably the wrong word, but it's just took too long.
The other thing is, and I forget this gentleman's name, if you're listening, you know, hey, hi. On my way back from I/O, I was in this Lyft ride. And it so happened that I think like Lyft mentions the name. So like one of the other persons was also an Android developer. And so then like we started chat because like he had listened to the podcast as well. So it was like a lot of fun. And he mentioned this thing about instant app. The funny thing is, I don't want to like divulge too much information because it was like with their company. But the funny thing that they noticed in their company when they used instant apps is that the SEO started to really dive. And this was interesting because typically when you implement instant app, I don't know the specifics, I'm out of my depth here, but definitely a huge sort of disadvantage that they noticed, because they were like also like initially one of the partners with Google on like the instant app front, is when they implemented instant app, the user experience definitely improved for them. They were like, oh, like it was a very fluid experience. But the thing they noticed is their SEO traffic really took a nosedive.
That's bad.
And that is huge. And then like, because in the end, nothing, especially if you work on like, you know, one of the public websites, like a realtor site or like a travel website.
Yep.
SEO is everything.
Everything.
You know? And so like the company was like, we don't care about this new thing that you're doing. Like our SEO is diving. We need to immediately. So, and you know, that's like, I think maybe a huge sort of collateral side effect that was not calculated on Google's part. This is definitely feedback I heard from, because we just never invested that much time in instant app because it didn't seem as compelling for me and like at least, you know, my use cases. But this developer definitely said that there was a huge problem and they actually completely ripped out the instant app feature because like their SEO was suffering and that was like a no-go for their business use case. So, you know, just like, you know, something to consider.
the Google algorithm for search is a complicated beast. If you piss that thing off, like, your business can tank. I've seen many businesses get heavily impacted. And there's a lot of things to take into consideration too, especially if the destination webpage contains things such as AdSense or any double click, anything that actually, you know, can also affect, even though Google won't admit to it, can affect various different aspects of SEO. And so you remove that from the equation, all of a sudden you're not as valuable to Google. Because, I mean, let's just be honest, Google's there to make money off ads. And if all of a sudden that site's not making money off ads, not getting the traffic, all of a sudden it's devalued. And all kinds of just variables pop up. So it's interesting to see that someone actually saw that happen in the wild.
Yeah. So, and again, like, this is just like one use case, right? There could be other people who said, like, no, this is like, in fact, helped them more because of discoverability and other stuff. But, you know, one thing is for sure. I know I heard of one person who said this didn't work out well for their company. And there was no mention of this in this time's Google I/O that I knew, at least. So
interesting.
Clearly something is up there.
So what else happened in the developer portion?
The other thing that was interesting is, did you see this new navigation stuff that they introduced? I know you did, because I saw your tweet about this. So for those who don't know, Google is changing like the whole navigation paradigm on Android. If you've used iOS, again, it's like ridiculously similar, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's funny that no mention of this was made. I will say, the teams that are working on this are like doing a spectacular job, right? Like, they're doing a very good job of, like, I think, like, trying to understand this, like, putting early like feedback out to like gather and like see how they can like reduce the impact of this change as much as they can. But I would say this, like, the new navigation stuff is like so bizarrely similar to what iOS sees. And I know, like, so let's maybe like dive into that for a quick moment, because I know, like, we had this back and forth on Twitter too, right? Because I know you posted something saying like this is kind of like, you're not too excited about this. So it is, again, interesting. Typically in Google style, there's like multiple variants. Like, so traditionally when you use Android, like, your bottom nav bar has always been like, you know, the back, the home button, and like, you know, the recent apps. Like, that's like old school Android, right? For those who've used the Pixel launcher or have used the Pixel heavily, they started to switch to this other paradigm where you have like this swipey thing in the bottom. So to reach the list of your apps, you can swipe up on your home screen and it'll show you the list of apps and that kind of stuff, right? If you swipe left, then like it's the instant app. And this is a setting that you can enable on the Pixel launcher. I don't think it changes by default. Like, you know, there's like this kind of this scrubber thing that's like replaces your home button. You can, like, if you like toggle it left or right, it moves to like recent apps. And that was like the second variant that they, I think, introduced last year. Now what they're doing is they're actually changing this whole paradigm completely and making it very similar to what the iOS devices do. So the way this works is, and again, I may not be recollecting because I use both an iPhone and Android, so it might be confusing. But for the most part, if you swipe up now on your home screen, basically, well, if you're using an app and you swipe up, it basically takes you back to the home screen, right? If you swipe in the right direction, what it does is it actually like simulates like a back button. So basically, a lot of this is very different from what you would expect. I think if you like, because the most common trouble is like, well, what does navigation draw? Like, how do navigation drawers work, right? Like, because typically right now, if you swipe from the edge of the screen, like, it opens up the navigation drawer, right? What's changing now is I think it's moving all the way to, it's simulating the back button. But I think it's a little different because there's like an inset, and like, if you swipe beyond a certain threshold, then it pops up the back button. It's better, like, let me put maybe like a link or something to in the show notes where folks can see the changes. It's very different. If you swipe in the bottom, then it acts as the app switcher, sort of. You can switch between apps, the recent apps, if you swipe in the bottom of the screen. It's just like very different sort of mindset. It seems initially very unintuitive because you're like, well, how am I supposed to learn these things, right? That being said, at least my two cents are, once you start using it, it's super fluid. Because with the iPhone also went through this huge transition. And once you get used to it, it's almost like you don't want to go back the other way. But it's a massive mental shift, at least initially. So at least those are my two cents. What do you think?
Initially, when I saw this, I was like, back button. It's one of the reasons why I love Android. It's just there. It's easy. I've always loved that button. And getting rid of it was like, are you kidding me? Like, no, do not get rid of that. I still don't know how it's going to work. I'm not using the Q preview. I was burned a couple versions ago where it like bricked, you know, the betas or whatever, bricked my device for like 5 months, and I won't do that again. But what I did do is I went back into the Pixel 2 settings, went into and just searched for gestures, and then you can turn on kind of like a somewhat, you know, like you were talking about those new variants where you have that little scrubber at the bottom. And right. I'm getting used to that actually. And I actually kind of like that now that I'm getting used to it. Took a little bit of brain rewiring to do. Now, the problem I have with swiping from the left-hand side of the screen is I'm one of those people that always has a case in my phone. I've never broken a screen in my entire life. You know, knock on wood, I always use a SpyGen case. It's, you know, it's not a promotion. It's just the thing that I use, and it's like always served me well, and it has a lip on it. And so if it ever falls, and the screen never hits the ground, it hits the lip. And I can't actually grab the side of the screen. So anytime I have to grab the side, I have to like literally force my finger over into the corner and then kind of move the case and then swipe. So I'm really concerned if that's going to be the case, then how am I going to swipe? I may have to cut a chunk out of this case so I can swipe directly over. Or they may have to change the way that they're developing cases. Like, this is going to be a big thing. And now after I've kind of gone this whole gesture route with the Pixel 2 and those new gestures, I do think once I get used to it, I think I'll probably like it. Initially, I was really freaked out, like, this is going to be a disaster. But I think it might work out. The only other thing we have to worry about as developers is there's a metric ton of navigation drawers out there, and it could trigger those. I know from some reading that I've done that one of the manufacturers has just detecting the swipe gesture at a different velocity. If it's a particular velocity or whatever, it's an, okay, that's a side swipe. Or if it's a slower one, then it's, or it's a app swipe. So we'll see how that pans out. I am optimistically cautious of this.
Right. No, I mean, I think that's completely fair too. And again, I'll drop like a link to like, I think there's like a dev byte or something that talks about this. So we can like, I'll definitely add that in the show notes, but you're right. I think it'll be great for users. This is going to be massive like change for developers. Like, I think there's definitely going to be a lot of stuff we'll have to do to make our apps work better in this new world. Mm-hmm. So quickly, some of the other stuff I thought like we can maybe touch on is, again, this time they actually, a lot of the announcements that were made were like, this time we're Kotlin first. So I don't know for folks who realize previously it was like, oh, Kotlin is also an officially supported language. And like, oh, but Java is going nowhere. Like, Java developers, don't worry. Like, you know, Java is like there. And right there, like I made this prediction. I was like, give it a year or two, everyone's going to want to use Kotlin, right? Like, if you're using Java as an Android developer, like, trust me, like, it is in your best interest to start learning Kotlin right away. And this was the next big sign. Like, Google basically made a huge announcement saying like, hey, Google is thinking Kotlin first. Like, Android is thinking Kotlin first now. Like, Kotlin is like not just another officially supported language. We're doing this a lot more heavily. So obviously that got a lot of applause. People were very happy with that. The other thing, and this, I'll again try to drop us a link to the session, Android Studio 3.5. Our friend Tor from the ADB podcast conducted this session. This was great because this was exactly the kind of things we wanted to hear. Android Studio, like, they're focusing completely on stability, right? And like, he talked about various cases where they detected issues and they've fixed it. This was music to our ears, like, you know, because a lot of the stuff they've brought in to like help with build speeds, to like make Android Studio more stable, getting like more like useful performance enhancements, music to my ears. So we're not going to go into the details of that. I'll drop a link to the actual session. I attended the session. I thought it was a fantastic session, one of my favorite sessions. Those were the biggest announcements, at least from Google I/O. Was there anything else that you want to talk about?
There is something else that I would like to talk about, and that's Jetpack Compose. But that's a big topic. So what we're going to do is we're going to save that for a future episode where we can dive into it deeply and really kind of get into the internals and see how it works from a developer perspective, which I'm sure all of you on the show would love to hear. So we're not going to talk about it today. We'll talk about it here in the near future.
Sorry, folks. Yeah, I know you've been thinking about Jetpack Compose. Don and I are we have a lot of thoughts around that. So that is probably going to be another episode.
Definitely. But no, I'm completely with you. 100% behind the Kotlin first. I've, to be transparent, I've never been a fan of writing Java. as soon as Kotlin came out, I was just ecstatic for the fact that they were supporting it firsthand as a supported language. And now that it's kind of Kotlin first, even better, because it's easier to sell from a consulting perspective. and then also platform improvements and performance. I know that's for developers that are on the Android team and the Android tooling team. Like, I know that is like super unrewarding work. Like, it's just, if anyone who's ever worked on a performance issue, like, it's just it's grueling. But
yeah,
thank you for working on it. I spend the majority of my time in Android Studio. I spend the majority of my frustrations dealing with Android Studio. So anything you folks are doing to improve it, if you're listening, Android team, thank you very much for working on it.
Yeah. And I mean, our friend of the show, Christina, had this to say on Twitter, which I thought was great. Like, Tor, I mean, obviously she means Tor and the team, but Tor is the hero we all need. Spending 20 minutes talking about how the team is fixing all the bugs you're seeing in Android Studio instead of introducing new features into it.
Yes, thank you, team.
That's so well said. Yeah, if you work on the Android Studio team and you're listening to this, thank you so, so much. This is exactly the kind of stuff that Android developers appreciate, like, more than ever.
Definitely.
All right, Don. That was a good roundup. We covered like a whole bunch of things. If folks have more questions, they should reach out. I attended I/O, so I can try to share some of my thoughts on that stuff. Don has been like actively following this, so you should reach out to him to get his opinion as well.
Definitely.
He's been very prescient with some of these announcements and predictions, so that'll be fun. But if folks want to do that, Don, where do they do that?
They can reach me on Twitter or Instagram, and that's going to be @DonFelker. And if folks want to reach out to you to see what your experiences were like or have questions regarding what you think or saw, how should they reach out to you?
Kaushik Gopal on Twitter, Instagram, and most other services. All right. Thank you all for listening. We will catch you in the next episode.
Before we get going, we'd like to say thank you to this episode's sponsor, Instabug, which is the most comprehensive in-app feedback SDK for mobile app developers. There's a special offer for all listeners. You can go to instabug.com/fragmented. You'll want to sign up, install the SDK, and then you'll get their free brand new t-shirt as well as a free 14-day trial. Again, to take advantage of that, you'll want to go to instabug.com/fragmented. Thanks, Instabug.
That's it for the show, folks. Fragmented is hosted by Don Felker and me, Kaushik Gopal. We edit and produce all the episodes here on Fragmented. Sarah the Amazing Jackson from the Spec Network helps with production assistance and wraps our final mix. Our theme and ad music is by the national recording artist Blueprint from Weightless Recordings. You can find more Fragmented episodes at fragmentedpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode.